And you're listening to your community radio station, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284AL Haleiwa, K224CQ Molawa'a. It's time for In the Garden on the Farm.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. We're your hosts, Paul and Robin, and on today's show, we'll ride a rocket of health and flavor from the kitchen garden, discuss the current state of the seed industry with our Hawaii representative from Johnny Selected Seeds, and get a leg up on a familiar but unexpected garden ally. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with our generous underwriters.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its Ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Kauai Marine and More, located in Old Kapa'a Town, is proud to underwrite this KKCR program. Kauai Marine and More features Honda garden and lawn equipment and also Echo Power Equipment. 823-0556.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building Island Koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored design and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
Garden Island Hydro, assisting with all your growing needs. Nutrients, mediums, all-natural compost tea, lights, aquaponic and hydroponic components, systems, and setups. In the Puhi Industrial Park, Lihue. Family owned and operated, open Monday through Saturday. More information at 246-4769. That's 246-GROW and online at GardenIslandHydro.com.
And thanks once again to our wonderful underwriters, you listeners out there, all the gardeners, all the people putting their hands in the soil, including the bright and wonderful Robin sitting before me.
Great to be here.
And we're backed up, as always, by our good buddy Mac.
How's it, Kauai?
He's always helpful when there's a hole to dig or stuff to haul or good ideas to germinate. And we're just in deep celebration of this amazing weather that continues on here in the middle of January. We have a superb show for you today, and so we are going to jump right into it with our celestial session, looking to the heavenly skies above for inspiration and guidance on our planting and harvesting. And we're going to acknowledge once again the 2015 Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendar, which is a Hanalei Watershed Hui and larger Hui that put this together. And we want to give away the new 2015 calendar, so we're going to give it away to the first caller at 826-7771. This is the Moon and Tide Calendar for Hanalei. And thanks to it, we know that today's Hawaiian moon is Kaloa Kulua. This is a diminishing or Emmy moon. And here comes our call for that calendar. It rose over Kauai at 1:42 a.m. this morning. Saw that beautiful moon when I arose today. Out of bed, I saw this beautiful crescent moon. She will reach her transit, her highest point, or she did. She did, in fact, at 7:33 a.m., and she'll set at 1:22 p.m. today. 35% of the moon's beautiful face is illuminated. We had last quarter moon Monday, a couple of days ago, around noon, and the mana'o for Kaloa Kulua These moons are sacred to the god Kanaloa, god of the ocean, who with Kane planted crops throughout Hawaii, and indeed, today would be a good day for planting banana, ohe, bamboo, ko, sugar cane, and vake, the paper mulberry. And these all tall plants, and that's a character that is shared by this influence of today. Tall crops are supported by the energy of the moon, Kaloa Kulua.
Well, that's beautiful, Paul. I witnessed the moon not long after it rose. It was around 2 in the morning, coming right in the bedroom window, and it was this golden light last night, so
really
different than the night before, which was much more silvery. Mm. And I also noticed it was horns up. And I know we're a gardening show, but it is one a cool moon for the fishermen, because when it's on the setting side, from what I understand, it's now dumping, the horns are down, and it's dumping fish into the ocean that are ready to be harvested.
Beautiful.
It really was glorious.
And you got back to sleep, I'm hoping.
It took me a little while. The light was so mesmerizing. But yes, I did, of course.
What do we have in the biodynamic look at things?
Oh, we have a transition from descending moon phase to ascending moon phase in the middle of our cycle here in this week. So today and tomorrow, the moon in Libra, an air sign, making it a good time to work with our flowering plants. And this is falling in the descending moon, so it's a good time for planting. So we can think about planting flowers. And although a lot of the annual flowers don't thrive in such short days, we do have those gorgeous tropical flowers that can be planted pretty much any time of year. And also, I was mentioning the avapui is now dying back, which means in just a short while here, it'll be ready for replanting.
I'm looking forward to that. Thank you for sharing the abundance.
Sure. Friday, the moon is in an unproductive phase, so we've got other things to take care of on days like that, such as mulching, pruning, fence repair. Oh God, it goes on and on. Saturday, the moon is in Scorpio, a water sign, making it a good time to work with our leaf plants and planting them, and that will be the final day of the descending moon, and then we will enter into the ascending moon phase when the energies of the plant move up into the higher parts of the plant. So we Sunday and Monday, the moon will be in Sagittarius, a fire sign, making it time to work with our fruit plants. Could be a good time for harvesting, if there's that to be done, pruning, air layering, things like that. Tuesday, next, the moon in Capricorn, an earth sign, making it a good time to work with our root plants. And that coincides beautifully with that new moon on, I believe it's Monday. Monday the 19th, the sun will actually officially enter the constellation of Capricorn. And the next day is the day we've all been waiting for. The day will actually lengthen by a minute.
Ooh.
On Tuesday, January 20th.
Not a moment too soon for some return of the sun, although the sun's been gracing us with so much beauty. And a little bit of news for In the Garden on the Farm. We're excited for this new year, and Robin and I were in the proverbial kitchen sort of jazzing up some new recipes. And we've decided to take a departure from our monthly focus on plant families for this year. And instead, we're going to dive into an assessment of all the various steps that we go through, whether we're growing a backyard garden to a large farming project, the different steps of development, all the areas of focus. And we're starting off this month, if people have been listening, on seeds, which really could be at either the beginning or the end of the cycle. But we are focusing in on seed cropping and choosing our seeds for the year. Next month, we'll be looking at site selection, assessment, and planning for your project, and siting, location, and all the considerations in that. That's going to be the month of February. Other months, although I don't have them all right directly in front of me, Robin, do you have them in front of you? Okay. But we'll be covering major topics like irrigation, soil building and management, pest and disease management, planting and tending your crop, all the various aspects we'll be going through on a month-by-month basis. We'll have a focus on botany. we'll have a focus on harvesting come around the long harvest season coming up in October. So we're really looking forward to this new focus. We'll probably jump back into the plant families next year, but it's nice to mix it up a bit and give it a bit of a different focus. So we have one more request for our listeners as well. One of the things we'd like to incorporate this year is finally getting out into the field and visiting farmers and experiencing live field recordings from out in the field. And we need a live recording engineer, a field recording engineer. We do have the equipment that we can use here at KKCR, but we need somebody who's interested in visiting the farms with us and running the microphone and the recorder. So if you're interested, please be in touch with us at inthegardenonthefarm@gmail.com, and we're excited to work with you. And right now we're joined on phone by, I'm thinking, Louisa Wooten. Just before we welcome her on, I want to thank Dave from Waimea for calling in for the 2015 Hanalei Moonatide calendar. And for folks who are interested, a physical copy, be in touch with Maka'ala at the Hanalei Watershed Hui office in Hanalei. But right now we are joined by Louisa Wooten from Kunana Dairy there in Waipake. And she's going to be one of the presenters at the Hawaii Farmers Union meeting coming up tonight in Anahola. Louisa.
Hi, Paul.
Thank you so much for taking a brief moment to call us. We know you're one of the busiest people out there and really grateful to speak with you briefly.
That's great. I'm happy to call in.
So please share with our listeners what is it that you'll be covering in your sharing this evening.
Well, it's going to be a pretty brief presentation, Paul, because I know that there's a lot of other business stuff on the agenda tonight, particularly to do with upcoming legislation and stuff like that for that the Hawaii Farmers Union has an interest in. But, yes, our President Ray Maki asked me to give a brief presentation on the importance and of farm livestock in a good, sustainable farming system here on Kauai. And that's what my presentation, and it's going to be brief, basically just covering the types of livestock and the benefits that are received from having livestock on a farm. Everything from producing food for you and your family and for sale to byproducts such as manure, which can be composted and then reapplied to your cropping systems. And that's sort of the system that we employ here at our farm and have done so for the past 30 years.
Well, very interesting, and it seems to me that you couldn't really have a truly sustainable farming system without the animals incorporated in it. Otherwise, nutrients and products are coming from elsewhere, and it seems that we don't have enough people who really integrate it fully into a diversified farming system, and certainly will be of great value to hear about your experience.
Right, and that's basically what I'm going to share is our own experience. We've raised goats here since 1979, and then we've also had chickens in a pasture rotation system. And since we are a certified organic farm, we've been somewhat, you know, subject to the National Organic Program, which changes the standards, changes the rules and regulations more frequently than one would think. I mean, we've gone from the time whenever we could let our chickens or our goats free range in the orchards to a time where, you know, we have to have a day withhold time because the federal government considers that to be applying raw manure, whereas for a while we were saying it wasn't really being applied or incorporated into the soil. It was only being deposited naturally by animals. But with the Food Safety Modernization Act and all the fear of whatever fear, that's changed too. And then since 2002, when we first started as a certified organic under the National Organic Program, we have to now take our animals away once we have a crop that can be harvested within 120 days. The animals can't be there, even though it might be a banana stalk that's 8 feet up in the air. We can't have our chickens running around there anymore, or we can't certify it as organic.
Right.
And I fought it tooth and nail, and I don't see the practicality in it. But whenever you also realize that the Amish farmers on the East Coast are now having to put diapers on their draft horses so that the manure is not falling while they're plowing the fields.
Amazing.
Yeah, isn't
craziness.
It?
Craziness.
It makes me want to put my head down and cry right now.
Well, I know that the food safety, the implications of the Food Safety Modernization Act is going to be another major topic discussed at the meeting this evening.
I know, and it's a biggie, you know. I mean,
yep.
Even in our dairy, you know, for I don't know how many years, the standard for food holding refrigeration has been 45 degrees. I mean, it's been forever and a moon, and now we have to hold our temperature at 40 degrees, which, of course, adds mm-hmm. more to your electric bill.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's all very, very ominous when you think about small farms trying to survive under these new standards.
Truly. Well, it seems that the organic standard has been modified so many times and considered diluted by many to not really represent the initial intention.
Well,
and that being a federal regulation, couldn't the Modernization Act be similarly amended?
Well, you would hope so. I mean, the thing is some people, you know, I mean, you're saying that you think the organic standard has been diluted. Probably on some levels, maybe. But on the other hand, it is a standard, and it is the only standard we've got. And they're constantly having comment periods. If they're getting ready to change, there's comment periods all the time where people can go in and say, no, I don't like that. I want it to be stronger, or no, that's too strong. You know, there's it's a labeling law. That's what the organic law is. It's labeling.
Right.
And it came about by consumer pressure. And, you know, when you really, really look at it, the federal government owns the term organic. That they own it. And for you to use that quote-unquote lofty title of organic, you need to be certified, or in essence, you are not within the law. And I know that many of us that go, you know, every year whenever I fill out the voluminous paperwork, or when I go to inspect a farm, I mean, I just inspected a farm over on the Big Island. It's one of the few organic honey operations. And honest to goodness, I think I had the pages, because it is such a large operation, I think I had to copy off 500 pages and then go inspect. It took me all day just to inspect that farm, and I didn't inspect all of the bee yards by any means, you know. It's onerous. It definitely is on some levels. Smaller producers, not so much, but
right.
It is what it is, and it's what we got to go with, and, you know, some of us feel like it's the way to go.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a lively discussion tonight at the Hawaii Farmers
Hello.
Union meeting.
So, I'm not sure if you heard Robin. Hold on. Say that again, Robin.
Hi, Lisa. Sounds like it's going to be a lively discussion tonight at the Hawaii Farmers Union meeting.
It always is.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, and we will let people know if they're interested to join that conversation. It's going to happen at the Anahola Clubhouse tonight from 6 to 8:30. It is a potluck. And I'm more information at the meeting, essentially.
Yes, and if people are going to show up, please do bring a potluck. It's really important. You know, some of us spend a lot of time preparing a dish, and it's a wonderful thing to share, but it's wonderful if everyone brings something to share.
It is. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for that encouragement. I look forward to trying your dish tonight.
Okay. Yours too. Bye.
Okay. Aloha. And this is In the Garden on the Farm with Robin and Paul and Mac and Robin.
Ah, yes. Well, we're expecting to do a great interview with our Johnny Selected Seeds Hawaii representative, Lainey Curtez, pretty soon here. But I think I have a minute to jump into the kitchen garden first.
Yes.
And there's a plant that's been growing so fast and so beautifully and is so good for us that I wanted to talk about it. And it is none other than humble working class arugula. Arugula, one of the fastest plants out there. Probably you'll eat leaves faster than any other seed you could sow. I believe it is super fast. As I said, it does well in containers. And for people who can only do container gardening, I noticed that Johnny's has this great, well, these little seed discs that have arugula seeds embedded in them and spaced just right for your little pot.
Quick question. Minimum size of container for that process?
I'd say a 1 gallon pot would be minimum. And if you have a bigger pot, you could probably fit more in there if you want a giant pot of arugula. But arugula in and of itself is super rich in phytonutrients. It's low calorie, high antioxidant values, got lots of vitamin A, vitamin C, B complexes, vitamin K. It goes on and on. And, you know, when the leaves are young and tender, they're really delicious in salads. But when the plant gets a little older, the leaves tend to get a little hairy. That's when I start sautéing it, and I'll use it in my stir fries and stuff like that.
This is a member of the brassica family.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And that's the classic arugula. Now, I had one plant in my garden, had some visitors over the holidays, and we fed 6 people weekly on this one plant. It was like every time we chopped it the next day, we went out and there was more. And that's just your classic garden arugula. There's also another variety known as wild arugula. That's Diplotaxis tenuifolia for anybody who's interested in checking it out. But that one, it needs no replanting because it shoots itself out into flower and seed so quickly while still maintaining nice leaves that it pretty much reseeds itself right around the garden. And I do find the flavor of the wild arugula, I think I like it a little better. Maybe it's just because it's so effortless and it's just always there for me.
Has it escaped the garden bounds? Do you see it around?
When I've dragged plants, you know, to the compost heap, I see ones that have sprouted along the way, little seeds that have dropped. They're microscopic seeds. But at any rate, arugula, really good for you, great addition to salads, and grows well any time of year.
And people always want to know a variety suggestion from you too, Robin.
Sure. Well, Astro is one of the most common ones. I personally grow a kind of a working class one. I think they're all pretty good. Haven't met one I hadn't liked.
Yum, yum.
Yes.
Thanks for the Kitchen Garden for all its gifts. Right now we're going to turn to our feature today, the state of the seed industry. We're going to be speaking right now with our special guest on the phone, Lainey Cortez of Johnny Selected Seeds. Lainey is the territory sales representative for Hawaii, the Northwest, Alaska. She's worked at Johnny's Seeds for more than 20 years, and she's worn many hats there. Variety trials in the early 80s was one of her focuses, and she's been a commercial technical sales rep, or she was for many years, and a seed buyer for 12 years. She knows every angle of this industry, which we are, of course, very passionate about here. So it's our great pleasure to take a moment to speak with Lainey. Lainey, are you with us?
I am.
Thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
You're very welcome. I'm happy to be here.
We're delighted
to be there in person.
I wish you were, too. When's that going to happen?
Maybe next fall. I'll be looking at that, putting Hawaii in my budget for next year, and hope to combine it with a trip with any conferences that may be going on. So I'll
yes.
be looking to see what else might be happening I can dovetail with.
Great. If you can speak a little louder into the phone, we've got you all the way up, just so we get a good signal from you.
Okay. Is this any better?
That sounds good.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Well, we will get right to it, Lainey. I'm so excited to be able to have this conversation with you. And we want to start out by asking from your perspective, which is a broad one, of course, what is the state of the seed industry right now?
Well, from our perspective, and I don't know if you mentioned, but Johnny's is an employee-owned company, so we cooperate with suppliers for all over the world. With seed supply, we have our own breeding department. So I think the state of the seed in the world is diversity, and that's where we'd like to keep it. I know there's a lot of consolidation going on in the seed industry, which we watch carefully as an independent seed company, and are trying to sort of maintain our own little niche of specialty vegetables and flowers and herbs that really our mission is to help families and friends feed each other. So, you know, that is our major goal, is to provide seed for that purpose.
Question about the diversity, because I hear from some commercial growers that, well, they understand the importance of genetic diversity and varietal diversity on one level, that they're really just looking for that one plant that is the knockout, because if it has a higher yield, a better taste, a better performance, why grow any of the other ones? And so do you see that the interest in diversity is based on different environments where the growers are, or is it more of the hobby grower that's interested in growing a wider variety that may not be the highest yielding varieties?
No, I don't. I think that there's a strong network of growers that really want to maintain diversity in the marketplace. And a lot of the patents that are going out now, the intellectual patents and stuff, are sort of limiting what some breeders can work with. We just took on a new breeder. His name is John Navazio. He's worked in the organic seed industry for quite some time.
Lucky you.
Lucky us. And he brings with his vast knowledge of plant breeding a real penchant for diversity and maintaining clean, open pollinated strains. So I think our focus as a seed company will be to work with him on that and maintaining good open pollinated strains, which could have variation in diversity to hybrid options. So I think as a seed company, we're looking at both sides of that thing. How can we create, really high-yielding knockout hybrids, and how can we also maintain the diversity of some of the standard open-pollinated varieties that are time-tested and tried and true, all over the globe?
Yeah, well, on the knockout varieties, I'd certainly like to ask you the million-dollar question about winterbore kale.
You and the world wants to know about that, and I tell you, we are poised and on the verge of getting our final allocation from the one company that creates winterbore. And Robin, you and I have had this discussion already, so you know what's coming. Is that the seed crop this year was infected with black rot, so the company is cleaning it up by doing hot water treatment on the seed, and with that whole process, you do the hot water treatment, then you retest it to make sure there's no black rot, then you test the germ to make sure you haven't killed the seed, and then you see what's left after you've done all that work. And then all the companies waiting for their allocations will be prorated if there's any kind of seed shortage. So we're just poised and ready to see what's coming our way.
Sure, and we're all anxious to get some of that winterbore seed into our coffers as well. But I certainly want to commend you and thank you for your fastidious position on the black rot, because that is just a terrible, nobody wants black rot.
No, it's a hard one to rotate against and it's a real difficult one because so many brassica species could just harbor the disease too. So we're committed as a company. We do a lot of behind the scenes testing, like all of our brassica crops are tested negative for black rot, which kind of puts us in a no-win situation sometimes when we're up against crops such as, for instance, this year we're dealing with red cabbages used for microgreens and salad mix. All the lots we've tested so far have come up black rot positive, so we've rejected them, and we only had a very small lot that passed, so we're selling that currently, and maybe there's other red cabbage for microgreens out there that's being sold that will be black rot positive. So even as a microgreen, the flats after the microgreens are cut go out into the compost pile, and the compost pile gets spread on fields or used in other applications. So the black rot doesn't just go away. It stays and becomes part of the soil.
Right. And I can't help but ask, given just how popular a variety winterbore curly kale is, just outperforming all of the other ones by miles, that is there any potential that somebody else, the fact that it's all in one seed contractor's hands now for a second year in a row, do they own a patent on that variety? Is that why no one else is trying it?
Being a hybrid variety, they own the parent lines for it. So they don't own a patent on it, but they do own the parent lines, which means that they're the producers of it. There's a comparable variety oh, and I'm going to forget the name of it. But we've tried to special it. It's from Syngenta, I believe, and that too, or maybe Cicada, and that too has been a crop failure for 2 years. So I think there's probably some issue going on where the seed is being grown, and maybe there's black rot in the fields, and they haven't been able to eradicate it. So it's an issue. It's a big issue. And as a seed company, we've been scouring the world for other kinds of kale that we can offer to our customers. We did find a variety from Europe last year. It was called, not a very PC name, but it was called, Green Afro. So it was an open pollinated variety that grew like a winter borer, on a taller on a stalk that you could pluck the leaves. It was a little less uniform than winter borer, maybe yielded a little less, but it did offer a curly kale to our customers. And because of the kale shortage last year and it being a biennial crop, that company will not have any new seed until the summer this year. So we don't even have that to sell this year. But we are looking at some other options, and we're testing, we're doing our own black rot tests on a couple other strains that have come to our attention. And we should know about the same time that the winter borer proration comes in, you know, if these other strains will be acceptable for our standards. So stay tuned. More kale to come. And we've decided to make a new bumper sticker that says collards is the new kale. So.
Yeah. We've been using
it's a very underrated vegetable, you know, and it has a lot of the same properties as kale.
Indeed it is.
Nutrient density and easy to grow and that type of thing. But
and sure grows great here in Hawaii, so.
Yes. Well, I tell you, when I visited Hawaii last time, I think everybody had winter borer kale or, you know, some form of curly kale growing. And had been growing it for months, so it's a very good crop for your climate.
As is collards.
As is collards, yes.
Collards is superb.
As is collards. And there's some new things coming along, too, that are in the brassica family, and it's basically a leaf broccoli. So instead of producing a head, it's going to be, again, in that same sort of collard kale family.
Is it the kailan or the gailan?
No, it's not a gailan. It's actually an oleraceae, I believe, and it may have a cross of the gailan. I haven't seen the actual species of it, but we've tried to get our hands on it for 2 years now. We've seen it in our trial, and it's quite striking. Beautiful, glossy green leaves, you know, a nice, healthy, robust plant. So I think it would be a nice specialty crop.
We'll try it.
You'll try it.
We will.
And then, of course, we have the new little kalettes this year that grow like a Brussels sprout. So that's a cross between a Brussels sprout and a kale.
I've been checking it out in the catalog. I've been bouncing back and forth. I haven't had a lot of luck with Brussels sprouts here myself. So,
right. They like the cooler weather, so maybe in the higher altitudes or something.
Correct.
On the islands may do better with that. You know, I think wherever Brussels sprouts could be grown, kalettes could be grown. But again, it's going to need a specific microclimate probably.
Right, right.
On the islands to work successfully.
Sure. Well, plenty of upland farms on Maui and the Big Island that would probably excel with that variety. Switching gears with you just a little bit, we have noted for years now that organic food sales just continue to rise, and that market segment is just so strong. And we're wondering, do you see that matched by a corresponding increase in organic seeds that people are wanting?
In our business, and we're very, you know, we watch this very carefully because, again, we have a strong penchant for organic seed, but we also recognize there's some not very good quality organic seed out there. So, again, because we're a quality-conscious company, we are looking for either productions we can control or from vendors that we trust as having really high standards. So for the seed industry, for that piece of it, we see it growing incrementally on our end, you know, a steady incremental growth. However, I see what I echo what you see, that there is a much bigger demand for organic food in the industry. So, and I'm not sure how it is on Hawaii now. I know that you lost HAFA in your certification, and so it's a little harder for people to become certified and maintain that on the islands.
Well, funny enough, the person we spoke with spoke with on the show just before we are speaking with you is maybe the only organic certifier left in the islands.
Yeah,
so, yeah, it's an interesting position we're in.
Yeah, it's a difficult, and I think the conference I intended was how to grow organics on the islands, and, you know, was there a need for it, and how would it better be facilitated through the industry, you know, and having inspectors and such more easily available. For us in our industry, we see kind of a maybe a third split on it, that there's the real diehard organic people who will always be certified and will always do the work to be certified and seek out organic seed. And there's another third that maybe have started off as certified and then realized that their clientele, their customers, don't require them to be certified. They know that their practices are organic, so they'll let their certification go, and they'll be a little more, I won't say lax, but a little less fervent about seeking out organic seed to grow the crop.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, so we see people that maybe are moving away from certification because they know their customers and their customers know their growing practices. And I think that lends itself to the buying local movement too, where people know their farmer and they go buy from them at farmers markets or a CSA or their own farm stand, and they know their farmer. So
yes,
they don't have to have the certification behind it.
Right. We love that value.
And then the other third can, you know, go the either, they just grow conventionally and are happy to do so.
If you've just tuned in, I want to let you know you're listening to In the Garden on the Farm, and our guest today, Lainey Cortez of Johnny's Selected Seeds. She's the Hawaii sales representative, as well as covering other parts of the Pacific and the Western United States, Northwestern United States. And we're here until 1 o'clock, and then somebody's going to be in for Kauai Vibrations. I think that Tracy has the week off. Right now we're just going to take a minute to play a public service announcement on a board of directors meeting for Ke Kahu Foundation. So, Lainey, please bear with us, and we'll be right back to our interview with you.
The Ke Kahu Board of Directors, license holder for KKCR Kauai Community Radio, will hold its quarterly business meeting on January 21st at 6 p.m. All interested parties are welcome to attend. For location and more information, call Steve at 652-3706.
Great. Thanks for hanging in there with us. And so, Lainey, I'd like to jump in and let you know that here on Kauai, for sure, thanks to our Kauai Community Seed Bank and other farmers, are getting more and more into seed production. And we'd like to know what types or varieties Johnny's might possibly have an interest in, if at all.
Well, we have a dedicated production manager, and he has a number of contacts on the islands to work with. We're starting to do some sampling to see what might work. Some of the products we're looking for are hot peppers, which we think might do well for seed production there. So that's one of the crops we're looking at. We're also willing to take suggestions and work with any growers who are interested. So mm-hmm. I would be happy, if somebody wants to funnel their questions through me, I would be happy to forward them on to Mike Brown, our production manager. And he's already working with a couple of growers on the Big Island to see what might be possible for seed production.
Excellent. Thank
you. Yeah, one thing we're looking at is, you know, sort of the cost effectiveness of seed production. So crops that, you know, don't require a lot of space are good seed producers. You know, our crops that don't have disease and insect pressures for the island. So there's a number of issues, but we are definitely looking to expand into the Hawaiian region for seed production too.
Well, one of the things we see here is with the biotech industry here is that one of the main reasons they're here is because there is a year-round growing season.
Correct.
So while straight production of organic seed, for instance, may be cost prohibitive, perhaps the research in breeding crops organically would benefit from the same thing that's drawing the biotech companies here and make that kind of a local business viable.
That's very true. And I think, again, with John Nabazio on board, and he has participated, I think, with OSA, with one of the workshops on the island for seed production, that we have a lot more of that expertise on staff now, too, that will help us sort of identify crops well-suited for your microclimates there.
Fantastic.
For your many diverse microclimates there.
Indeed.
We sure look forward to a conversation with him on that subject.
Excellent.
Yes, and just finishing up, one of the final things that we're wondering about, I'm sure that being interfacing with Hawaii, you know that Kauai specifically, or I would say all the Hawaiian Islands, are very conscious of the GMO issue, genetically modified crops. And we are wondering, how do you address customers' concerns about buying seeds from biotech seed companies?
Well, right now there's very few vegetable crops that are GMO produced. And the companies that we buy from that may have used GMO in some of their breeding, the crops we're working with them are traditional breeding, the Monsantos and the Syngentas and such. And we have longstanding relationships with these companies, and they have very reputable standard breeders out there too. As far as GMO goes, you know, Johnny's has signed the Safe Seed Pledge. All of our purchase orders that go out say we will not accept GMO seed. Our suppliers know who we are, know what our expectations are, and so if there's ever any concern, you know, we would have a long discussion before any sort of questionable seed crossed our path.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. So can customers be assured that they're not buying seed that was produced by, say, Seminis or Syngenta if they're purchasing organic seeds in your catalog?
Correct.
Okay. Because there are people who are definitely not even wanting to give one thin dime of their money to said companies, and it's something that people talk about here a lot when we're talking about purchasing seeds, is making sure that we're not buying them from one of those companies.
And we do have, you know, when we have queries from our customers, too, we do have a list of all of our products that do come from said companies so they can avoid them. And we have, it's our strong desire to find comparable varieties and replace them with other suppliers as we've been diligently working through that list for the last, you know, dozen years, trying to weed out the Seminis, Monsanto, Syngenta varieties that we feel would be, you know, wise to maintain a comparable variety in our product line.
Sure. Well, I want you to know personally, I appreciate that very, very much, and appreciate your diligence about that, too. It makes a big difference to me when I'm purchasing seeds, which I do a bit of. And I just want to wrap up our conversation by asking you, Lainey, what are some new varieties in the seed catalog, the 2015 Johnny's catalog, that you're excited about that you think would perform well here in Hawaii?
Well, we have a number of things in the lettuce line that I think probably we just have so many new lettuces. I would say just check out online or in our print catalog all of our new lettuces. We have a really nice blonde Lolo called Ilima. That would be probably one that works well in a romaine heart type called Sparks. We have some heat-tolerant ones, too, that would probably work well. I'm really excited about a little exclusive we have from a domestic seed company, and it's called Amara. It's a mustard green, but it's also got some other names it's known by, such as Ethiopian kale or Highland kale or Abyssin's mustard. It's Texel green. It's got a lot of other names it's known by, but it's a very high nutritious, mild mustard flavored green that it's just marvelous to eat and grow.
Oh, no doubt, because that represents the one kale that we can take to seed here in Hawaii. We're very familiar with it. We call it Ethiopian kale here.
That's it.
And
that's
those things are huge. They're five-foot plants.
Yep. Yeah. So it's a different species than kale. That's why it goes to seed for you. So you can do that. So that's an exciting one for us. We've added some new Luzianthus flowers, which I think would probably do very well in the islands, and they're just gorgeous, long blooming types. You have to be a little patient for the germination. It's a long germination process, but once you get them growing, they should produce for a good, 6 months for you.
Wow, cool.
We want a new little butternut squash. We want an AAS on this year, one called Butterscotch. It's a Machada. It's a long season. I don't know how many people are growing winter squash in Hawaii, but it's a nice little personal size, 1 to 2 pound butternut.
Due to the fruit fly, it's really what we can grow outside are the winter squashes. And butternut is not one that we see regularly grown in Hawaii.
Yeah.
So
a lot of winter squash is sort of regionally what's regionally accepted. Mm. I know when I moved, from southern England to Maine, there were a whole different range of winter squashes eaten here that I wasn't ever exposed to in Connecticut. So I would say that a lot of it is just sort of regional preferences. So it might mean, you just have to introduce them and see what the acceptance is. They're very nice eating squashes anyway. And those small personal size make them nice for CSAs and farmers markets. So you're not going home with a big squash. You don't know what to do with it at all.
Indeed.
Yeah. I know a lot of people here would be real happy to know there's a butternut we could grow.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it would be nice if you could. I would love to sample some, too. So if people just want samples, give me a call, and I'll be happy to send out samples for trial.
Fantastic.
That's something I like doing with the growers in Hawaii, too, is if you're unsure of a crop or you're not sure it's going to work well for you, that is a process I can work with you in sampling out quantities for trial.
Wonderful. Well, we'll definitely follow up with you there. And
there's one other thing, just because I
please.
Know the restaurant trade is so good there, is we have a new little tendril pea. So it's grown as a garnish pea, and instead of producing tendrils, it grows little leaflets. So it's called petite green snap green, and it's a really fun little pea. We loved it in our trials. We love to eat it. It's a beautiful garnish. It's a cut and come again kind of crop. So
nice.
If that is something that I know the heat may not, but again, in certain areas, a crop like this might be something good to bring to chefs.
That sounds brilliant. The microgreens business is thriving around here, mm-hmm. and we've had such cool weather this winter that we do things seasonally here. You can do it while you can, and then you kind of can figure out pretty easy when it's too hot.
Right.
Well, thank you for all those great suggestions. And if people are seeking more personalized guidance on their orders, how do they get in touch with you?
On the Johnny's website, there's a Meet Your Rep area, and they can just click on that and get my information. And certainly they can call me direct or email me however they'd like. And I'm always happy to work with the Hawaiian growers. I love that. There's so much interest in diversity there, and I would love to encourage that. I was surprised at how little food was actually grown and consumed on the islands and how much was still imported. So I would be very happy to support the buy local, eat local movement there.
Excellent. Well, Lainey, thank you so very much for taking this time and for diversifying our farms. Clearly, many, many commercial growers depend on Johnny's Seeds for their production, and I'm grateful to know about the different dimensions of your work and the values you're putting into it.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And we'll see you next year sometime.
Yeah.
I'd love to.
For sure. Come look us up when you're here.
I will. Thank you, Robin, and have a great year, and I will talk with you again soon.
Thanks so much.
Look forward to it. Aloha.
Aloha.
Aloha. That was Lainey Cortez from Johnny's Selected Seeds.
Way cool. I've been waiting for that interview for quite a while.
Yeah,
what a
really,
pleasure.
Really cool. And
really
we're going to bring you lots of great interviews coming up from Voices Near and Far this year. So stay tuned for In the Garden on the Farm each and every Wednesday from noon to 1. And we have a few minutes for a prickly subject, potentially, but one that we're going to invite you to rethink. Robin.
Yes. So when I'm talking about this, I do want you to know I'm looking over my shoulder. I'm checking the ground around me, and you knew that sooner or later we were going to talk to you about this. We want to talk about centipedes.
Yes, we do.
Yes, because they are carnivorous predators. And in their size range, they're really some of the only carnivorous predators out there. And when I was doing my research, because, you know, we've all seen them around, and we're gonna give you some basics. But what's really interesting, the fact that stood out, since we only have a few minutes, I want to make sure I get to this, is that a centipede will eat anything that isn't larger than itself. Okay, so you, those little house mouse, bye-bye, birdie. Okay, so the venom that stings us and causes the burning, uncomfortable situation is actually used to kill or paralyze prey. Mm-hmm. They eat cockroaches. Mm-hmm. They eat all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
So I appreciate them for that.
Indeed. Centipedes, known as kanapi in Hawaiian, according to the wehewehe.org, a Hawaiian dictionary website, love that, wehewehe, suggests that it was that these animals were not well known before Western contact. However, thanks to the work of the Bishop Museum and affiliated researchers, revealed there are various endemic Hawaiian centipedes, although they are certainly not the ones that we're regularly familiar with. Those being the Scolopendra genus, the Chinese redhead or giant centipede, or the jungle centipede. I like that one. That's kind of our most common. We also have another one, which is the Tanzanian blue ring leg centipede. And I would imagine that you have seen both of these around. And the thing that always comes up for me with centipedes is it's truly our actions that cause us to either be bitten or not bitten. And while sometimes it's involuntary, maybe a centipede has made its way into your bed and you roll over on it or something like that.
You had to say it, didn't you?
It does happen from time to time. It's happened to me a couple of times this past year. People's reactions vary wildly. And I'm actually surprised when I speak with somebody who's been in the Hawaiian Islands for many years and still has not been bit. And for people who haven't been bit, you have to be prepared for a range of responses. Your body, either like mine, will experience pain, sharp pain for, honestly, for me, it's about 5 minutes. And within an hour, I don't even know I've been bit. In most cases, whereas other people have very, very serious reactions.
Well, I would argue that that is how badly you were bit. Sometimes they don't really get a good latch, and you don't get a whole lot of poison. Although the ripe noni fruit has done wonders for me on a sting immediately, if you can hang out with it on the bite for 30 minutes. Of course, you want to make sure that you're not seeing any red line moving up your arm or body parts, because that means it was instantly infected,
right.
And that can be life-threatening.
Truly, in a very short period of time.
In a very short period. So I just want to give a few basic facts. You've noticed that they like moist areas, and that is because they lack the waxy cuticle that most bugs have. And so they need to keep them, they dry out more easily. So they need to keep themselves cool and shaded, hence under rocks, logs, pretty much anything they're under. Also, little known fact, they can only see light and dark. They do not have true vision. So,
which is surprising to me, because the number of times that a centipede has looked up at me, and I'm thinking, it sees me. But
it sees your light,
yeah,
my brother.
It sees my light.
Okay, then the little modified first pair of legs called the forcipules. They form that pincher-like structure. It's just behind the head. That's where the venom glands are located. There's that. And then, reproductively, if you've ever disturbed something that hasn't been disturbed for a really long time, you might have seen the hideous and glorious motherhood of centipedes.
It's so beautiful.
It's pretty outrageous.
A centipede in a circle, either clutching her eggs or the nymphs.
The nymphs.
The incredible albino small centipedes.
That's right, which cannot live but a moment out of her arms. I've accidentally disturbed them, and she'll try to gather them up, but the ones that don't even live for a minute. And actually what I learned is she's licking them to keep them free of funguses, because funguses will kill the larva. So she's actually tending them, keeping them clean like that.
Yeah.
And then you notice they're little, and then they're big, and so they go through moltings, and they go through about 5 molts in their lifetime. They can live up to 10 years if they don't have a fatal encounter with one of us. And each time they molt, they get some more pairs of legs and get bigger and bigger and bigger. And we're asking you to allow them to live in their outdoor world, because they can be beneficials by being carnivorous predators in the insect world. And I understand why we don't really appreciate them when they're inside of our homes. However, outside, if we kill them there, it's like, where are they really going to go? Where can they live? It's my question.
Yes, and they love the compost pile, and the number of times I've been in the compost pile barefoot and had centipedes just crawl over me just on their own way to their own place, lifted them out of the wheelbarrow when I've been shoveling compost. They're really not aggressive. They just want to live their own life and love the centipedes, and I'll do it. If you go to the KKCR Facebook page, give me about 15 minutes after the show, I'll post a picture of me being very comfortable with a centipede. So go and check that out on the KKCR Facebook page if you want to understand coexistence on an interspecial level. Just time for now.
Brave brother indeed.
Time now for just a couple of quick announcements before Kauai Vibrations. Tonight at the Anahola Clubhouse, you heard it's the Hawaii Farmers Union United meeting, monthly meeting from 6 to 8:30 p.m. Topics discussed will be small animal systems with Louisa Wooten, as well as the Food Safety Modernization Act. And our island representative, Ray Maki, has recently been to Oahu for the yearly legislative session, and lots of really interesting and exciting news there. So 6 to 8:30 at the Anahola Clubhouse tonight. Let's see, Saturday, it's the third Saturday work party at the Kauai Food Forest up in Kalihiwai, 10 to 3. As well, in Kapa'a, it's the Kamoku a Manokalani Po Pa'ina Makahiki. This is the Makahiki Festival, games, etc., starting at 7 a.m. with registration, 9 a.m. gates open. And that's going to be a really fun, amazing event celebrating the season of Lono. And finally, we want to let you know about the fact that we need a mobile audio engineer. I mentioned this once before. And so be in touch with us at inthegardenonthefarm@gmail.com. Tune in next week for more discussion on seeds. And, we're just really grateful to be here with you here on Kauai Community Radio.
This has been In the Garden on the Farm with your hosts, Robin and Paul. We'd like to thank our guests on the show today, Louisa Wooten of Kunana Goat Dairy and Lainey Cortez of Johnny's Selected.